was only a matter of time. "So you're building an avatar," she said, selecting a ready-made bowl of rice for her meal. "Well, yeah, seemed like the next step," Nico answered, as she retrieved her warm bowl, removed the packaging, and stirred it. "This way he'll be able to populate throughout the ship without dragging his armiger body around and trying to squeeze into small places. No offense," he said to the armiger.
"None taken."
The last thing Ryan wanted was an ancient being popping in at will from every holopad and system panel on her ship. As she stirred her food, she regarded the armiger with a frown. Something was different about him, but she wasn't sure what. It was in the face and angles. They looked somehow less severe, softer. Ram entered in his pajamas, sleep still clinging to his eyes. He grunted at them, completely uninterested in what was happening at the table, and went straight for the coffee dispenser. Nico sat on the edge of the table, studying the avatar.
"We just have to find the right look."
"What's wrong with that one?" she asked, leaning against the counter.
"Well, that's the old him. He was Chakus, yes, and he was a monitor, but now he's both. He's more. He needs a new persona. Right, Spark?"
"Spark?" Ryan blurted, nearly choking on a mouthful of rice.
"Why can't you have an open mind?" Nico said, highly exasperated.
"I have an open mind," Ram snorted. Ryan shot him a look. She didn't have to wonder whose idea it was to start this little venture, because it sure as hell had Nico written all over it. But as she ate and considered, with an open mind, the idea did have its appeal. Dealing with an avatar was far more comfortable than with the alien creature in front of them. It wasn't the size or hard light or alloy that unsettled her. It was the absence of facial expression. There were times when she could read emotion, noting that his light tended to get brighter if he found interest or annoyance in something. His tone and body language were easy to read, but he often clammed up, and then Ryan didn't have a clue what he was doing or thinking, or what his emotional state might be. And for a creature she didn't trust, that was a hard thing to accept.
"No, you don't," Nico said after a long moment.
Ryan frowned again, as wariness crept through her thoughts. It was a mistake, Nico welcoming the armiger with open arms, not knowing his true agenda. His time on the ship was temporary. They had a deal, and once that was done, the crew and the armiger would part ways, if his word was any good. Despite her reservations, she couldn't bring herself to rein on Nico's good mood. In the days since the armiger had been brought on board, the old Nico had begun to resurface from his grief. He was seeing the good in everything, the possibility in everything. He had purpose, drive. Both he and Les had been struggling since Cade's death, understandably, and part of Ryan had worried that Cade's passing would change them so completely that they'd lose everything that made them who they were. Now she could see a glimmer of hope.
"Fine," she said, trying to be open-minded, but she drew the line at Spark. She had to wonder what the armiger thought about that.
She turned her attention on him.
"So, Spark, huh?"
The armiger dipped its alloy head, which caught the light. The alloy seemed in better shape than when they'd pulled him from the wreck, less weathered, the color more dark gray than black now, though that could just be the illumination in the lounge.
"That name will do for now," he said.
"No, no, no."
Ram banged his head against the dispenser, cajoling the brewer to stop sputtering the coffee and actually pour it. Before Ryan could wrap her head around the shifting appearance of the armiger, Lessa walked in with a load of laundry and set the basket down beside the counter that held the built-in steamer. She opened the flat panel, tossed the clothes inside, shut it, selected her preferences, and then looked at the gathering with curiosity. She'd yet to tame her tight blonde curls, and they seemed to hover around her head like a weightless cloud.
"What's going on?" she asked, approaching the table.
"Does he look different to you?" Ryan asked.
"Who, Spark?"
Ryan rolled her eyes.
"Yes, the armiger."
Les stared at him. She and Nico had spent way more time with the thing than Ryan had. Perhaps they hadn't noticed at all.
"Are you repairing yourself?" Ryan asked him suddenly.
"He is not repairing himself," Nico said excitedly, eyes growing round. "He's transfiguring. He's been doing it since we brought him on board, little by little.
Transfiguring into what? Ryan asked, standing straighter.
This form is a soldier, the armiger answered.
And he prefers not to look like one, Nico said. That's all.
The ability for armigers to transfigure was quite common, the armiger explained. My alloy is made up of metals and machine cells, which interface with my artificial neural framework. However, the interface is severely damaged. Once we get to Treniel, I will have the tools to repair the damage.
Les slid into a chair. I can help with an avatar, she said. I'm pretty good with stuff like this. She cracked her knuckles and critically eyed the avatar. Nico narrowed his eyes. He doesn't want to appear human, Les. You don't? She asked the armiger.
Ryan watched the exchange with curiosity and conflicting emotions. Smart AIs were a common enough occurrence these days, but most everyone knew they exhibited emotions and preferences, developed their own unique personalities, and often chose to represent as human. Ryan had come across dozens in her lifetime. The armiger, in many ways, was no exception. He had his own sense of humor, preferences, and no doubt a wealth of other emotions. But he was also quite singular, complicated, untrustworthy, alien. Maybe Nico was onto something, and an avatar was a step in the right direction, or at least a more comfortable one for the crew.
For now, we need to settle on an avatar, Nico said.
Ryan finished eating and cleared her bowl. When she turned around again, a new holograph was hovering above the table. It was a nearly identical version of the armiger, though maybe a bit softer around the edges and hard angles.
What do you think, Captain? The avatar asked, the voice sounding more human than ever.
I think we created a monster. His manner seemed to deflate.
No, it's not a bad thing, Lessa assured him quickly, while shooting Ryan a glare, as did Nico. At least the two were finally agreeing on something.
It's just an expression. Please search the phrase. I promise it's not bad.
I see,
the armiger's avatar said at last.
Nevertheless,
he manifested a silvery orb in his hand with an eye of blue. It was a scaled-down version of 343 Guilty Spark.
I have been a monster, he said,
staring at the image for a long moment before pressing the orb into his chest, where it disappeared, leaving only a vague, dark gray impression behind.
To remind myself what I am capable of, and of the horror that I can and have inflicted.
Lessa leaned in and gave him a warm-hearted, encouraging smile, her chin resting in her hands.
Well, I think it's perfect. Nice to meet you, Spark.
Thank you, Lessa.
Ram passed with barely a glance, sipped his coffee and said,
Avatar is fine. Name is fine. It's not that hard, people.
And then he walked out. Chapter 27.
After the avatar rendering, I continue my work in the cargo hold, upgrading what I can in the Ace of Spades' system, pending our arrival at Treniel. I direct Ram Shalva, using my armature body to aid him in implementing repairs and manual upgrades. While I do this, several versions of my avatar linger with the rest of the crew. One is at Nico's desk as we work on upgrading his drones, Michelle and Diane. Another converses with Lessa. We talk about star charts, navigation, and which color would look best painted on the lounge walls. Another avatar appears on the tactical table on the bridge, while the captain sits in her chair, absorbed in checking systems and stores. I study her features. I have noted that she usually braids her dark hair and wears it twisted at the nape of her neck. Today it is braided in a loose rope and hangs over her shoulder. She attempts to be severe and commanding, erring often on the side of quiet and aloof, sometimes harsh even. But this is just a mask she wears. She smiles when she does not mean to, laughs out of turn, and looks upon her crew with caring. She also grieves deeply for her lost comrade, Cade. I hear her some nights in the small gymnasium, hitting the equipment in anger and grief, and I sympathize. Your father, John Forge, I say, and she looks up from her work.
What about him?
You believe he is still alive? She thinks for a long moment.
Sometimes I wonder if I'm chasing ghosts. All I know is that if I were lost, he would go to the ends of the galaxy to find me. He'd never stop.
Forgive me for saying this, but you barely knew him.
That's true. We missed 26 years together. I know it's a long shot finding him after all this time, but if there's a chance, I have to try.
In that, we are in the same predicament. She with her father, me with a librarian. And what if he is dead, I ask?
Then at least I'll know the truth.
What will you do then?
I don't know. Move on. Continue working, I guess.
Your friends, the crew, they mean a lot to you.
Yes, they do.
She tilts her head and studies me, trying to see if I'm leading to some point.
As your friends meant a lot to you, I'm sure.
The truth is, Riser and Venevra, born Stellar, they are long gone. Stardust now. It is strange to have lost them so long ago, but only recently to have remembered them at all. Their loss, it still feels fresh.
You really think the librarian can bring them back?
Of course. Ryan bites her lip in hesitation, then says,
Sometimes when people have been gone for a long time, we have to consider letting them go, letting them rest in peace.
Then she smiles,
which I know is an empty sentiment coming from me, the girl who's been looking for her father for 2 decades.
You have not yet said if we have an accord. Will you help me and accompany me to Earth? I have allowed her ample time to decide, but now I must know.
Help me get our things back, and yes, I'll help you in return,
she says. We have an agreement, then. She nods.
It's a deal.
I say nothing, and she returns to her work. I continue watching her, however, wondering why I feel no guilt at my deception. Her father is dead, yet I do not tell her the truth. Sometimes we must be willing to do wrong in order to do right.
Chapter 28 Treniel, July 2557. After dropping out of slipspace 3 hours earlier and making a course correction to Treniel at subluminal speed, Ryan was eager to get a look at the arc of blue and green, now filling the view screen, as Ace entered high orbit. The planet was 1.5 times the size of Venezia, with azure oceans and 3 emerald continents. According to the Armiger, in the early days of the planet's life, the long, narrow continents had once been a connected ring of volcanic mountain ranges that had wrapped like a spiral around the planet. In time, the range had broken into 3 pieces. The pieces eventually cooled, and the volcanic activity slowed, allowing a temperate, lush world to evolve, and creating a perfect future environment for the Forerunners to colonize. Treniel had remained untouched since the Forerunner Flood War. As they descended, entire cities were revealed, poking through the canopy of green, sitting empty for 100,000 years. Ryan had always envisioned hitting the salvage jackpot, what Salvager didn't. But this was unlike anything she could have imagined. And while it was a breathtaking sight from their lofty position, she had to remind herself to hold her interest in check. Jackpot or not, they had no idea what they'd find on the surface, nor could they be 100% sure of the Armiger's true intent. While Nico and Lessa had begun calling him by his newly chosen name, Ryan found she couldn't just yet. To her, he'd be the Armiger right up until he proved he could be trusted. He'd been right when he said trust was earned. And so far, he hadn't done anything to earn theirs. Their time on Treniel, however, might just reveal the truth. As Ryan guided Ace into low orbit, she glanced at the tactical table, where the Armiger's new avatar stood with his back to her, watching the planet along with Nico, Les, and Ram.
We are the first humans to lay eyes on this world, he said.
Ram caught her eye at the comment, but said nothing. That the Armiger chose to think of himself as human was strange, seeing as how he'd decided on an avatar that was anything but. Ryan supposed that was the point. He was both, and he wasn't shying away from it.
He manifested a holograph of the planet on the tactical table, complete with transparent mountain ranges giving way to cityscapes of soaring spires and vast complexes.
This is our destination.
He moved the planet with a flick of his hand and zoomed in on a facility built into the side of a mountain at the very tip of the central continent.
This is a builder facility. It will have everything we require.
But you haven't been here before, right? Nico asked, fascinated with the view.
That is right. I learned of Treniel through data acquired during my time as monitor of Installation 04, though at the time this data was compartmentalized, as much of my acquired knowledge was then. There was a great deal I learned through many sources.
What kind of sources? Nico asked, turning away from the view.
My fellow monitors, the array's data stores, through visitors to my installation, my explorations, communications, and alliances. Every interaction is full of data, more than most can fathom, he said.
Ram turned away from the view screen and stared at the hollow image with unreserved disbelief.
Never thought I'd see something like this. We could spend a lifetime in just one building. Imagine all the day-to-day machines, power sources, armor. The list is endless.
Guys, this is way better than a debris field, Nico said, joining him at the table.
Ryan couldn't argue with that, but she wasn't sold just yet.
When things looked too good to be true, they usually were. All right, let's head in.
She exchanged a look with the armiger and gave him a nod to take control. Ace descended through the atmosphere, and soon they were picking up signs of life.
Marine, mammalian, avian, the armiger said as he monitored the sensors.
How encouraging. Treniel has flourished.
They broke through clouds, and the central mountain range came into view, enormous and jagged and trimmed in a carpet of green that went all the way down from its slopes to the oceans on either side. Ahead of them, a large winged creature glided on outstretched wings toward a misty valley below. The thing was nearly as big as Ace. As they continued their descent, flying closer to the mountains, massive roots appeared, as thick as old sequoia, clinging to the rock. From the roots, large spikes grew at random angles, the sharp ends pierced with limp shapes and bleached bones. Land and sea animals, in different stages of decomposition. The macabre mixing with the surrounding beauty was a strange and unexpected sight. Ryan straightened in her chair. In the spaces between the spikes were hundreds of translucent egg sacs, holding what appeared to be embryos of whatever life form had put its rotting food on display.
Impressive, the armiger said. These were once small birds, similar to the butcher birds of Earth. They impale their food on thorns, saving it to feed the young and to display for a potential mate. The more carcasses, the better the chances of mating.
Well, they're not small anymore, Les said, pointing to another huge winged creature perched at the base of one of the spikes, pecking at the guts of one of its purest meals.
Are they territorial? Ryan asked.
Oh, most certainly, the armiger answered, admiring the great winged creature.
Then let's keep our distance.
The peaks gave way to a sloping valley and a high plateau that supported a large city with soaring towers of steep, geometric angles, their silvery-gray metal still gleaming in places. There were bridges that spanned impossible heights and other buildings of smooth, polished stone, trapezoidal in shape, with flecks of some luminous mineral catching the light. Everything was straight lines and angles, though not entirely in pristine condition. Massive, evolved roots had snaked their way around the skyscrapers, creating thorny ribbons around many buildings, and creating natural bridges from one tower to the next. The alien birds ruled this area. That much was clear, but even the overgrowth couldn't diminish the size and scale and beauty of Treniel's ancient structures. Ram's whistle filled the bridge.
I have to hand it to them, he said in appreciation. The Forerunners sure knew how to build a city.
Despite the grisly sight of avian meals pierced on spikes, there was astonishing beauty everywhere they looked. Trees with draping limbs were covered in small pink blossoms, millions of them, all over the city, creating a wash of green and pink and metal and root. For a moment, Ryan forgot her trepidation and let awe and the rarity of what they were seeing wash over her. The blossoms rose en masse into the air, carried on breezes coming in from the coast, creating a dance of pink clouds that gently rose and fell all over the area.
Incredible, the armiger murmured thoughtfully. I believe the toxin created a divergent evolutionary path for not only the birds, but for all the flora and fauna as well.
Ryan's good feelings faded. What do you mean, toxin? The armiger shifted to face her.
In the final days of the war, the inhabitants of Treniel were in the direct path of the flood. There was no escaping their fate, no help forthcoming, nowhere to run. In an act of defiance, and some would say immense courage, they released a planet-wide toxin, depriving the flood of its food source and thus its potential for enormous growth.
He paused.
This was a dead world before the flood arrived.
The mood on the bridge fell somber. They all died? Lessa asked, eyes going wide. Mass suicide?
Yes, they all died. It was an end preferable to what awaited them. They weren't the only planet to do so.
All those towers and buildings and homes, they weren't abandoned or empty. They were filled with the dust of millions. The beauty below them, the untouched growth, the flowers and roots, were a memorial of a world gone collectively silent. The remainder of the flight was quiet as well, and eventually they arrived at the tip of the continent and the slope that held the Builder's Seed facility, which overlooked the Blue Sea. As the armiger navigated Ace beneath a giant route that spanned from one mountain ridge to another, and then came around to a docking station covered in overgrowth, small debris, moss, and flowering vines, Ryan couldn't help but feel small in relation to the facility and the nature around her. Like a tiny fly, they came to rest in the place of ancient spacefaring gods. A place ripe for plunder. A place that could be their own tomb if they weren't careful. Ryan drew comfort from the routine task of suiting up in the locker room with the crew, grabbing her rifle and handgun from the armory, and then unlocking her grav cart. This was what she knew, and she could do it with her eyes closed. After hanging her tool bag on the cart hook, she calm-checked the crew, then waited at the head of the ramp while the airlock doors opened and the ramp lowered. The armiger's footsteps rang out behind her, sending goosebumps up her arms. She glanced over her shoulder as a tall metal figure appeared, its hard light glowing and reminding her that he belonged here among the ruins and ancient technology. He drew to a stop beside her.
Ready, Captain.
She faked a smile. Yes, she'd run all the tests herself, but she couldn't help but ask, Are you certain the global toxin's inactive at this point?
Quite certain. It has long since dissipated.
After you, she said, and allowed the armiger to proceed down the ramp ahead of her. Ryan gestured to the crew, and then they were on the move, heading into the facility and fanning out. The G's on Treniel were a little heavier than optimal, but it was manageable, and the atmosphere was good. Boots crunched over dead leaves and debris. Beyond the docking station, the calls of wildlife and alien seabirds echoed. The warm air was fragrant with a mix of flowers and sea. As they entered the structure, familiar glyphs appeared on the walls and floor. The armiger moved ahead, approaching a console, which Ryan immediately recognized. It was very similar to the one they'd found in the ruins of the debris field, complete with domed pad. He stood aside and gestured for Ryan to place a hand on the pad.
What will happen? Power returns to the facility.
Staring into the eyes of a 100,000-year-old AI to try to find the truth felt like an exercise in futility, but Ryan did it anyway. He regarded her with understanding.
Do you remember our conversation about trust, Captain?
I wouldn't call it a conversation, she said, frowning. His shrug said the choice was hers. He wouldn't force her. How nice of him. He'd been right when he said back on the ship that trust was a hard thing to give. It was especially difficult for the jaded, for the ones schooled in hard knocks and painful lessons. But the trust she had to put in him now wouldn't exactly be freely given. They hadn't come to Treniel because of a mutual decision, and if they wanted to get home in one piece, playing the armiger's game was a necessary evil, whether that game was an honest one or not.
Might as well get this side trip started, she muttered,
slapping her palm to the dome's cool surface. Instantly, the console lit up. The facility came to life. Glyphs and lines and lighting activated in sequence like dominoes, illuminating a vast circular chamber with a central vertical cavity that rose high into the mountain and dropped deep into its depths. The scope of the place exceeded Ryan's imagination, more expansive and strange and awe-inspiring than any ruin she'd ever visited. Only this wasn't exactly a ruin. It was, like everything on Treniel, a place in waiting. As they approached a railing that overlooked the cavity, a spiral walkway ringing its interior wall sprang to life, lights winking on one after another in a dizzying display, from somewhere high above them and disappearing far below. One story after another was illuminated inside the cavity, displaying not only the walkway but hundreds of glass-fronted rooms built into the cylindrical wall. Several stories below, an ancient piece of technology was revealed, suspended in the center of the cavity by clamps, attached to long spokes driven deep into the rock. Nico leaned over the railing.
"What is that?"
The armiger leaned over the railing to get a look.
"A translight engine. There are several engines below that one. The cavity is very deep."
Ram's laugh suddenly echoed through the space, sounding a little dazed and giddy.
"A translight engine? Oh, no big deal. Just a translight engine."
He turned away from the railing and pulled the rolled cigarette from behind his ear, giving it a deep sniff, then chuckled again. If there was any occasion that called for a celebratory smoke, this was it, but he simply rolled it between his fingers with a disbelieving grin. "This is unreal," Lessa murmured. Ryan studied the enormous chamber with a feeling she couldn't quite name, but it wasn't excitement. The technology here was extraordinary, and Oni's warning and Kip's loss on Cedra weighed heavily on her mind. "Where to?" she asked the armiger, wanting to move things along. She waited while he accessed a terminal nearby. Now that power was restored, he didn't need her DNA to search through the terminal's knowledge banks.
"Third level below us," he finally answered,
staying right where he was. Ryan moved closer.
"What are you doing?"
"Powering the communications satellites in orbit. It'll take some moments for the relays here to send the signals, then further time for the satellites to come online."
"Amazing that things still work, though," Lessa said, wandering around behind them.
"The Forerunners built cities to last millions of years," he told her matter-of-factly. "The cities of Treniel can be powered on at any time, like activating a switch. It all comes back to life."
"Let's not get ahead of ourselves," Ryan told them, before they got any bright ideas. She edged closer to the armiger. "Why are you accessing the satellites?"
"To send a message."
"What kind of message?" The armiger withdrew from the terminal.
"Please, follow me."
Ryan stepped in front of him before he could walk off and ignore her question.
"We all have our secrets, Captain," he said,
staring down at her from his lofty height.
"Do I demand you share yours with me? We have a deal, or have you forgotten it already?"
"No, I haven't."
"Then that is settled."
He moved around her and headed to a circular platform nearby, which was slightly raised from the floor and emitting a soft blue light. "No, it's not settled," she thought, as he stepped onto the platform and motioned for the others to join him. "Not by a long shot." Once everyone was gathered, he pressed the panel nearby. In the blink of an eye, they were suddenly several levels below, standing on a different platform and bent over, gasping. All but the armiger and Ram, oddly enough, who stood there just fine and looking at them with a triumphant grin at having escaped the physical ramifications of instant teleportation. Ryan scowled at him and stumbled from the platform, found the nearest console, and leaned against it, needing to ground herself to hold onto something solid and real. She felt ripped apart and put back together, and her body didn't know if it wanted to vomit, faint, or explode.
"What the hell was that?" Nico asked out of breath.
"Translocation platform."
The armiger walked past them and headed for a long corridor dug into the rock. Ryan lifted her head, exchanging looks of disbelief with her crew, before she bit back her physical distress and followed the armiger. The first chamber they entered appeared sterile and clean, with tall tables set beneath strange devices hanging on tracks above.
This is the laboratory where Crystal was cut.
The Armiger crossed to a long wall, where neat, illuminated shelves held shiny, rectangular boxes of varying sizes. The Armiger reached out and selected the smallest one, no bigger than a finger, and opened it. Light spilled from the container. He snapped the lid shut.
This one will do, but I must warn you all. Even a sliver such as this creates spatial distortion, exposing you to radiation and disorientation. It is capable of bending space and time, energy and gravity, and is not to be handled under any circumstance except within the confines of the box.
Nico was immediately fascinated and stepped closer to the shelves.
If all these flakes are so powerful, how do they handle cutting it? I'm assuming they cut the flakes from a bigger piece, right?
The source crystal, also called the mother crystal by the cutters. It does not reside here. Rather, larger pieces were cut from it and transported to manufacturing facilities across the Ecumene. The cutter would then slice off flakes from the pieces for use in ships, from the smallest craft to the largest. Those devices hanging on the tracks are crystal cutters.
So where is Mama Crystal these days? Nico asked, as the others were examining items.
I do not know. The location was one of the best-kept secrets in the Ecumene. Only the cutters knew, and they would die rather than reveal its location. Crystals are inherently dangerous.
He lifted a metal hand, ushering them away from the boxes.
Therefore, I cannot allow you to salvage these. We have taken only one, which will act as an accompaniment to the upgrade seed, and even then, it will be stored in its protective casing until the upgrade process.
Ryan wasn't ready to entertain the idea of upgrading just yet. But there was no point in arguing about it now. They left the room and headed to another stomach-altering translocation pad to another level, and the jump did not get better a second time around. After recovering, they followed the Armiger into another laboratory of polished white walls and counters that seemed to have been carved from one piece of stone. Or perhaps it was metal, Ryan wasn't sure. As they entered, massive holographic displays along the walls powered on, filling with glyphs, blueprints of ships, and other elements of design. This is where they drafted the design seeds, Ryan guessed, as she stared at one of the large projections. It was the blueprint for an incredible angular ship with three long wings, unlike anything she'd ever seen before. She had a deep appreciation for starships, their design, power, lines. She loved everything about spaceflight. And finding designs from an ancient advanced race was nothing short of extraordinary.
Yes, the seeds are codes, drawn with hard light filaments and coded with quantum commands.
The Armiger stood next to her and studied the blueprint that had caught Ryan's attention.
A key ship, he told her, regarding it for a long moment before moving on and accessing one of the glass panels on the counter workstation.
Another screen lit up with strange glyphs and patterns and glowing strings. The screen itself was an incredible bit of technology. But when the Armiger reached into the screen and began pulling and manipulating light strings, she was stunned and her jaw dropped. She watched, fascinated, as a blueprint of a Mariner-class ship appeared in the background of the screen. The Armiger had somehow put Ace's specs into the screen, and was injecting light strings and code into those specs quicker than she could keep up with.
This will take some time, he said over his shoulder. I will complete the design seed and then repair the injury to this Armiger's neural framework. You are free to salvage this level.
The Ace crew left him and headed farther down the corridor.
So, anyone think this is strange? Nico asked.
Ryan glanced over her shoulder.
What do you mean? I don't know. The whole place, the whole damn planet. It's one giant grave. Looting here?
Feels a little wrong, Lessa finished.
Yeah, something like that, he said, then gave them a wry smile. Look at us, salvagers with a conscience.
Finding Forerunner artifacts was the highest achievement for a salvager. They were rare and took effort and time and money to find. Ram was right. Being here was a dream come true,
and yet there was nothing in her Gravgaard. Ryan and Ram exchanged locks. They'd both been in the salvage business a long time. They'd looted wreck sites, tried to be respectful of the dead, following protocol wherever they came across remains. But they had to eat, they had to buy fuel and supplies, and couldn't be squeamish or let their emotions get in the way of a job. Even though she too was reluctant, she forced the feeling away. "Try to put it out of your mind," she said. Knowing the idea of planet-wide suicide was hard to forget, but they did need to focus and get this little side trip done. And get back control of my ship. "Anyone who is here is now long gone. We do this like any other job. Concentrate on restoring the nest eggs Oni took from us." An hour later, they had each filled their grav carts with small devices and artifacts they'd found sitting on or within lab workstations, none of which they could identify. Everything they picked up was sleek and alien, and way above their ability to understand. They'd need the Armiger's help to classify their small trove of salvage. It had been a slow process, and they hadn't gotten very far in terms of exploring, because there was so much to marvel at, and so very little they actually wanted to disturb.
As they headed back to the seed-building lab, Nico veered down a small corridor they'd skipped before. Like all the other places they'd seen so far, the walls were polished and etched with straight lines and glyphs. The doorway at the end was open, its frame tall and trapezoid in shape, and carved like everything else. The rooms inside led one into the next, different than the labs they'd been in, more intimate, with seating and rugs on the floor, geometric art on the walls. They were drawn into one space after another. Every room they entered seemed frozen in time, as if someone had just left. Things still left on a table, drinking vessels, utensils. Then they came upon the remains. Four sets of headless armor, stylized shoulder and arm guards, torso plates etched with symbols, leg braces and boots, bound by the molds of their former hosts, remained poised in a tableau on a long couch, shells of a couple embracing, and two others turned toward each other, their gloves entwined. Four helmets sat on the cushions beside the armor, as though just taken off, in order to face each other, say goodbye, whisper words of love or fear, perhaps. Small traces of dust and bits of bones on the armor and seat suggested that these ancient giants had decomposed to near ash, leaving behind their dust and hollow armor as markers of lives long since lost.
"Yep, I'm out of here," Lessa said, immediately turning and heading into the corridor.
There was a fifth forerunner sitting at a lit control panel with a screen above, arms and hands stuck in a position of action, its helmet still on. A shiver went down Ryan's spine. Nico stepped forward, just enough to see the panel. He reached forward slowly and pressed the glyph under the gloved finger. The screen shimmered to life, and they recoiled in surprise at the forerunner staring back at them. It was a seated figure in the same armor as the deceased, only his helmet was off. Thanks to the story the Armiger had shared, they'd seen images of forerunners in and out of their armor, but seeing one virtually alive was astonishing. He was surprisingly familiar. The facial shape and bone structure were almost identical to those of humans. The eyes were nearly the same, but the nose and mouth were very small, just slits for nostrils and tight lines for lips, and his skin was a dark gray, given to tints of blue. He began speaking, but the language was incomprehensible. Movement by the door indicated Lessa had returned, lurking there as the Armiger entered in behind her. He scanned the room and then approached the screen. He touched the pad, entered commands, and it began to play again, now translated.
"The toxins are airborne. They say we won't see it, smell it, or be pained by it, only that we will grow tired and sleep. The flood is upon us, our sensors indicating star roads already opening outside our orbital defenses. We have only hours now."
He paused.
"I and two others remain here. Their spouses have joined them. Together we will shut down the facility and power down our personal ancillas to prevent them from saving us. This is our last act of defiance. The Flood will get nothing from Treniel. We stand united. We fall together.
He cleared his throat and lifted his chin.
And may our sacrifice, all 883,489,876 of us, from the youngest to the very oldest, be forever stored and remembered in the sacred halls of the domain.
The screen faded.
I have completed my tasks, the Armiger said in the ensuing silence.
Good, Ryan said in a clipped tone, turning away from the scene. Let's get the hell out of this tomb. Before they left, the Armiger paused at the terminal on the main level, checking to see if the communications relay was now operational. Ryan waited for him to send out the message he'd mentioned earlier, but he hesitated.
Once the relay is working, Lessa said, stepping next to the Armiger. Others will find Treniel, won't they?
The Armiger was quiet for a long moment, and then dipped his head.
Yes, eventually.
She sighed, wistful.
Seems a shame.
The Ace of Spades flew over the cities of pink and green and metal and root, then across mountain ranges and ocean, and finally up into the atmosphere, past communications arrays and satellites that hadn't been used in 100,000 years. The Armiger had pulled them offline before they could reboot. Turned out he had a conscience after all. Treniel would remain a lost planet, in a lost star system, in a lost sector of the galaxy free from mass exploitation. As it well should be. Chapter 29.
We leave the system, and Captain Forge sets course for a small moon called Myers Moon in the Shap system, a familiar waypoint the crew uses to refuel, restock, and rest between missions. 10 days pass before we arrive, make a quick visit to the outpost, and then settle on a wide stretch of beach near a shallow sea. I used the time to engage my neural interface and guide my Armiger's machine cells to begin the transfiguration process I desire. I made it a slow process to ease the crew into accepting something other than what they have grown used to. Had the ship upgrades proceeded, it would have taken us mere hours to arrive, but the captain is stubborn and afraid of change. Change is a force she cannot control, so she ignores it and instead looks for ways around the obvious course of action. I do not need to convince her or push her in the right direction. She will come around. I know her story, and I know her life will never be as it once was. She has found too much and lost too much to ever go back. She understands this, too. Once the ship powers down, the airlock doors release, and the cargo ramp descends. The metallic echo of my footsteps fills the hold as Nico and Lessa run through the ship, dressed in very little, towels tucked beneath their arms. In minutes, they are off the ship and racing across the sand straight into the water. I walk to the head of the cargo ramp and marvel at this very human picture framed by the metal plating of the ship. Their laughter echoes over gentle waves as iridescent moon crabs tiptoe for shelter and birds cry overhead. It is their spot, they say, discovered many years ago. Captain Forge appears next to me. She is wearing very little as well. Her hands are full with towels and a blanket. I do not communicate with her, and I find quite abruptly that I am not in a sharing mood. Ram Shalva arrives with a grav cart loaded with chairs, drinks, and food. The captain places her items in the cart, and then we are headed at a sedate pace to the beach. Later, after swimming has exhausted them, Ram stands and smiles at me, a flash of white through his dark beard. I'm going to collect wood for fire. Come help me, he says, walking off. I follow him into the rocky landscape sparsely populated with coniferous trees, curious at the cause of my maudlin state. I pick up dry sticks. This is very different from space, he notes. There is a wisdom in him that is not present in the others. Yes, I say. It has been a very human day. My armature feels unnatural here. In space, it is indeed different. I am among technological advances such as myself. But here on the beach, I stand out. I cannot swim or drink or eat, though I do remember those experiences. You were human once, he says, hunting for tinder. I was. I am. I do not know how to answer. You are whatever you choose to be, Spark. Ramshalva is a watchful man, the kind who sees into the heart of things much more easily than most. A loud scream echoes over the rocks, followed by laughter. We step to the edge and see Nico and Les half carrying, half dragging the captain back into the water. You ever think of giving up your quest? He asks me. I turn to him, prepared with an immediate denial, but the words seem stuck in my vocal components. Finally, I manage. No, of course not. But there is no fire behind it. Do you ever consider giving up yours? I mean, of course, his desire for revenge against Geklar. He regards me for a long moment, then dips his head in acknowledgement. We return to foraging for wood. Night falls, and the sky shifts through stages of orange, pink, purple, and then an inky blue. Stars appear. The campfire sparks and snaps and shoots embers into the night. It is a lovely sound, the sound of fire, the sound of friends, the sound of laughter. I have joined them via my avatar, using Nico's data pad, and am presently admiring the way the starlight reflects on the dark water. Lessa turns to me and says,
Do you think there's a god? I mean, an omniscient and omnipotent one?
Before I can answer, Nico laughs and rolls his eyes. Les's expression darkens. I am not old enough or wise enough to know such things, I say.
Did you believe in a god in Merontic?
She continues.
When you were human?
Many believed in the animal spirits who reigned over the western grasslands, the jaguar, the crocodile, the great elephant, and Abada, the rhinoceros. But above all, we believed in the librarian, the supreme life-shaper. She was our goddess, our mother, kind, loving, and beautiful beyond compare. She rode on a great starboat and appeared to us when we were infants. In Merontic, there was a temple built in her name, and my sisters served there as prayer maidens.
You really think she's alive?
Nico asks. I know so.
You sound like Ryan,
Lessa said with a smile.
I guess sometimes you just know, right?
Captain Forge gives her a nod, and there is a small smile on her face, but there is also sadness. She does not know if her father is alive. She only hopes. Like me, she burns with a need for answers. All this time, all these years, long years in Ryan's time frame, John Forge has been gone, yet she cannot give up the search. He is family, so she exists on hope. We are the same in this, and the loneliness, the need to connect with family and loved ones, is strong. It drives us both. Guilt suddenly washes over me. Perhaps it is the moment, the connection I currently feel with her. I have the answers she seeks. I should tell her the truth. Is that not the kind thing to do? I watch her smile at the group's conversation, her eyes bright, a twist to her lips, finding humor in small things. What will it do to her, I wonder? What will she do when she learns he is truly dead, that her relentless search all these years has been in vain? Ryan, I begin, before I can stop myself. Her head turns. The light of the fire reflects in her dark eyes. She looks younger, not so burdened by worries at the moment. I find I cannot get the words out, cannot be the deliverer of such pain.
Nor can I stomach the thought of losing what little trust she now has in me. I did not complete the revival of the communications array on Treneal, and in doing so, I did something good. I have gained their trust. I cannot lose it now.
Is something on your mind?
She says. It is nothing important, I reply. No, the time is not yet right for truths and pain.
Chapter 30. Myers Moon, Shap System, July 2557. The next morning, Ryan woke with a long stretch and a decent attitude. The sunlight and fresh air had done her a world of good. After taking a quick shower and grabbing an energy ration, she decided to link up to the local commsat in orbit and see how things looked in the salvaging world. Once the link was established, she opened chatter, waypoint forums, and private channels, waiting for the latest news and messages and posts to download. It didn't take long, and soon she was browsing the trader and salvaging channels. Apparently, she was the subject of several posts. Gek Lar had placed a very large bounty on her and the Ace of Spades crew. Very, very large. Well, that's what she got for shooting him in the face and laughing at him as an invaluable forerunner debris field exploded around his ears. She rubbed a hand down her face and let out a heavy sigh. Could be worse. There were several messages from Noor about favors, Gek, and a message from Agent Han caught her eye. She opened it and read what was there. Well, well, well. Now Han wanted to make a trade. He was offering the return of Little Bit's projections, their personal items from the warehouse outside of New Time, and the credits Oni had seized from their bank accounts. In exchange, he was asking for the salvage they'd taken from Gyrinos A. He crafted a convincing argument she'd give him that. He wrote about good relations, no underhanded tactics, just a simple trade. And then they'd go their separate ways, his only objective being securing the salvage and clearing them of all crimes against the UNSC Salvage Directive. What a load of crap. There was nothing simple about it. Oni would be out to capture the salvage, along with Ryan, her crew, and her ship. There was absolutely no way they just let them dump the salvage. No harm, no foul. Oni had to be sure they were getting it all, and in order to do that, interrogations and a ship-wide search would have to be conducted. As she ate her energy bar, her thoughts spun. She didn't just want their things returned. She wanted the Office of Naval Intelligence off their backs for good. Later, Ryan headed outside in search of the others. She found them down the beach by the tide pools, with fishing poles made of thin sticks. Climbing the rocks, she watched them for a moment, noting that there was nothing big enough in the tide pools to actually eat. She put her hands on her hips. And this is what we call an exercise in futility, children, she said, smiling. Lessa's line snagged a moon crab. Oh, really? Who's futile now? She flung the thing out of the water with a squeak, aiming directly for Ryan. Ryan jumped back as the stunned little crab sailed past her and plopped into another pool. Laughing, she caught sight of the armiger sitting atop the rocks above them and made her way up to join him. Enjoying the break? He didn't answer the question, saying instead,
I had forgotten how much I once liked the water.
Since Treneal, he'd been changing more and more, his alloy nearly smooth now and a luminous silvery gray. His face was different too, she noticed back on the ship. His eyes bigger, kinder, if such a thing was possible, the angles less severe.
They are amusing to watch. Ah, finally.
He suddenly stood and called.
There are other ways to catch a fish.
In an instant, the armiger's forearm and hand realigned, becoming a weapon and firing a gold energy beam into the waves. A second later, a large fish plopped onto the rocks, landing right at Nico's feet. The kid screamed as the fish flopped around. The siblings then engaged in an amusing wrestle to catch the thing. The armiger sat down, chuckling as his weapon mutated back to a hand and forearm.
I have been waiting for that fish to get close enough to the rocks to do that.
Still absorbing what she'd just witnessed, the armature transforming its components into weapons, Ryan said, "With a sense of humor like that, you fit right in." She gestured to his arm. "Could you always do that?"
"Not until I repaired my neural machine cell interface on Trinial."
So he was armed even when he wasn't. Ryan stood up and brushed the sand from her rear. "Come on, I'm gathering the crew. Seems Agent Han is ready to make a deal." Some time later, after Ram had built another fire and Nico was roasting the fish over the flames, Ryan told them what she'd learned and what Agent Han wanted in return.
"You can't sell him out, not after what he's been through," Nico said, shooting to his feet, ready to defend Spark at all costs.
"Calm down, kid," Ryan said. "No one is selling anyone out. I'm just telling you what they said, not what we're going to do." Nico turned his attention to the Avatar, which had joined them via his small holopad that had been set atop the cooler while the Armiger was presently in the ship's hold.
"We're not selling you out."
"I am not worried that you will."
"We know it's a trap," Ryan said. "But there might be a way to go to this meeting and get our things back without being apprehended. If we set the time, pick the place, and use it to our advantage. And," she drew in a deep breath, "I can't believe I'm going to say this, but we use the upgrade seed."
They stared at her with mouths agape. Nico's fish caught fire and fell into the flames. And still, no one moved or spoke.
Ryan used a stick to move the fish off the coals. She supposed she'd earned their reaction. They all knew Ace held a special place in her heart, so the fact that she was willing to change it was a stunning revelation.
"To escape, we'll need a ship more advanced than, or at least comparable to what Oni will bring," Ryan continued.
"Ryan," Lessa said, "you don't have to do this. Ace is your ship. If you are doing this for us..."
Ryan shook her head. She had given this a lot of thought.
"I'm doing it for me, too. I have very little left of my father, and I want it back. Everything we've been through, I don't want it to have been for nothing."
She dug in the sand with her foot.
"This is what we wanted. This is why we went to Gyrinos, eh? We're in Oni's sights, and that's not going to change no matter what's decided. I don't know about you guys, but I'd really like to make them think twice about making enemies out of salvagers."
"So what's your plan?" Ram asked.
"We control every detail of how this goes down. Oni will underestimate us. They can't help it.
They have no idea that we have the armature on our side. They have no idea that he's anything more now than what he was when brought on board the Rubicon. We'll use all that to our advantage, and we'll give them what they think we have."
"And if things go south?" Ram asked.
"Oh, I'm counting on things going south." Nico blinked in surprise.
"Wait, we want things to go wrong?" "As a distraction," the Armiger surmised.
"Exactly. You all should know that Geklar has issued a very large bounty on us, me in particular. All the salvagers, traders, and mercs are talking about it. Which means Oni will have a hard time catching us when everyone else is trying to do the same." Nico frowned.
"Sounds real safe."
"It will be if we play it right."
"They'll have their prowler in orbit," Ram said. "Maybe more than that. We might escape the meeting, but what about escaping the planet?"
"That's why we use the upgrade seed. If we're caught in space, then everything achieved on the ground will be for nothing. We need to make sure we can outrun them." Her chest went tight with the reality of what she was saying. She didn't want to reconfigure her ship, didn't want anything to change. But things had changed, and it was high time she accepted it and started playing by new rules, not the old ones. She had a chance to outmatch the Office of Naval Intelligence itself and get her personal items back. And now, thanks to the Armiger and his upgrade seed, she'd have the ability to search the galaxy more quickly than she'd ever thought possible. With the projections returned, finding her father seemed more of a reality than ever before. How could she turn her back on an opportunity like that? "Yes," she finally said. "I'm sure."
"So, how do we do this?" Ram asked, looking at the Armiger. "What can we expect?" The upgrade seed will not change the outer appearance of the ship. It will only strengthen its existing materials by